This is the Nerdcast, Season 5, Episode 6.
Greetings, my friend. This is the brain of TV's Pinky in the Brain. You are listening to the Nerdcast, but what you're really listening to are subliminal messages saying, I will obey brain. I will obey brain. I will obey brain. I will obey brain. Yes!
Welcome back to another episode of the Nerdcast. We have the whole team here.
Hooray!
Yay!
Hooray!
I immediately went to let you guys speak, Bob, and you barely said anything because last time you complained that I talked too much before y'all ever had a chance to say anything.
We get together ahead
It's
of
not
time
so much that like, you talk too much before we have time? A thing. It's not that you talk too much before we have a chance to say anything. It's that you talk at all. I mean, let's be honest.
Ouch. Thank you, Tyler. Much appreciated. So as I said, the whole team's here. Adam, Bob, Aaron, Tyler, and of course myself, Iggy. And I guess Tyler's already back at it and nothing's really changed, huh? So another week of recording. But we are going to open up a little differently than normal with some special guests. So for those who aren't familiar, there is a recent fan film release called Rare Breed that takes Dazzler versus Luke Cage. And even has a little Professor X action in it, some solid special effects and a lot of fighting going on in it. So we have a few people from that from the team that put that together, including Dustin Hawk, who was, I guess, the creator in short, Amanda Fellner, who played Dazzler, and then, of course, Philip Meese, who is my understanding is a fight choreographer and had a lot to do with the production of it as well. So welcome to the show, you three.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, guys.
Hello.
All right, so I'll start with you, Dustin. Why don't you give us a little rundown of what Rare Breed is all about? Probably a better summary than I did.
Sure, that's just fine. Just one real quick, for one, it's Dustin Hawkins. Little INS on the end there. Basically, Rare Breed was just an opportunity to do a fan film about the Dazzler. And a lot of people know about the Dazzler. Some people haven't. It was a chance for us to do a movie about a character that hasn't been shown yet in any of the Marvel movies. It's a non-for-profit production. We spent a lot of time working on it. Probably about 100 hours total went into it in manpower and making the film. And just to summarize the film, it's just basically about the Dazzler trying to get some information to Professor X about why S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Sentinels created by Trask Industries is working together. That's pretty much the movie in a nutshell there, though.
There you go. 100 hours for 10 minutes. And I think you bring up right out the gate a really good point there. People don't realize how much time and effort even go into these short YouTube fan films, videos, whatever they are. I mean, it's a lot of effort for these.
And that's not an exaggeration either. Between filming, which was a good 15-hour day almost, and then between the editing, the special effects, the multiple shoots we made, it easily was over 80 to 90 hours of work.
It's impressive. I want to say that the special effects that went into the 10-minute fan film just kind of blew me away a little bit. Like, it was really good.
Thank you. That a lot of that credit goes to two particular people, Robert Miranda and also one of my good friends, Vicente, who actually lives over in the UK. Actually, multiple people that worked on this project live over in the UK, including some of my special effects artists and my composer as well. So it's amazing how much non-local talent is also included in making this.
It's the magic of the internet right there.
Yes. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, adding on to what Aaron was putting there, a lot of special effects, a lot of action, too. So it was very high-paced, probably the entire 10 minutes.
Well, and a large credit of that goes to Philip Meese, my fight choreographer. He helped me slap that fight together. I had a Hollywood version of the fight, and he had more of a realistic fight. And that's the one thing that I'm actually really proud of, is that I feel like the fight had a really good pace to it. And it was believable in the sense that a girl fighting a guy that size.
Well, I can relate to you, Dustin Hawkins, because that's why I have all these people around me, because I have these Hollywood visions and they bring me back to reality sometimes. So, yeah, tell us, Philip, why don't you tell us a little bit about that action?
Well, it was a lot of fun to do. We worked really closely with Dustin, met at a pizza place and just, you know, kind of talked, well, I want this to happen, this to happen. Okay, well, how can we get from this kick to that, you know, ending up with Dazzler winning or Dazzler, you know, how do we tell this story with the fight? And it was just a really cool collaborative work from, you know, costumes and makeup and Dustin, and he had the script supervisor, Harley, who was helping us the whole time, and Amanda and Nathan were great to work with. I think we had like maybe an hour. We did the fight. We said, okay, well, this is how it's going to go, and good luck.
Wow. And even an hour of practice, hour of practice.
Well, yeah, rehearsal time.
Hour of practice, but you guys also have me at pizza place. But no, that's pretty impressive for short hour. Don't put your face in your palm, your face there, Aaron. Pizza place. Everybody loves pizza. Anyways, impressive action nonetheless, especially for such a short turnaround. Do you have a lot of history with like fight choreography, or are you just more into history of fighting? I guess I don't know. Do you get beat up?
No, actually, I was trained with the Society of American Fight Directors. Their organization does theater and film, and they do stage combat workshops, and their primary goals are keeping people safe and effectively telling the story, because nothing's worse than treating your actors like they're, you know, dispensable or disposable, and because usually there's more shows, more things they want to do with their career.
Typically.
Yeah, so you want to keep your actors alive, and you also want to tell the story, and you don't want people to be removed from the violence by saying, oh, that was totally fake, or that was horrible, or that was just uninteresting to watch. So I did a theater major, William Jewell College. It's a small liberal arts college, and they allowed me to do this internship where I got to go to the Society of American Fight Directors and learn this really cool niche skill. And Dustin was gracious enough to invite me along for the ride.
Yeah, I think in two you highlight, there's definitely a challenge in creating a realistic fight scene without really hurting anybody. I think that's probably even more challenging than one or the other, you know, and then just hurting somebody or being unrealistic. But
Amanda, people realize.
Yeah, yeah. Amanda, we haven't heard from you. So what was it like to play Dazzler in this?
It was pretty fun, actually. Although the first time that I met Nate, who plays Luke Cage, I was really a little intimidated by him. His arms are like the size of my head. I'm supposed to be fighting this guy? I'm really glad I have mutant powers right now.
Yeah, for real. Those arms were literally the size of your head.
They were cute. But one of those punches, as you were saying, you know, we have to make it look good without actually hurting one another. He was like, no, you just do it. One of the stomach punches, it really is. I was actually hitting him and he didn't even move.
It literally really hurt your hand. You didn't have to use special effects for that one.
Actually, I mean, I pulled back a little. I wasn't all punching.
She wanted to keep her fingers working good there for the costume design. I saw you were credited for costume as well on this.
Yes, I did the costume for myself for Dazzler. And as far as the range of difficulty of costumes, it's not the hardest thing ever. But Dustin and I talked quite a bit about how we wanted her to look. And we wanted to keep some of the original concept ideas for the Dazzler, like her star symbol, which is pretty iconic for her, but we didn't want, you know, the roller skating, you know,
no disco
going on. So we had quite a few conversations about exactly how we wanted to portray her, and we wanted to make it look like she may or may not have been on the run for a while, you know, staying away from the Sentinels perhaps. It was a Yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of finding the right pieces and putting it all together.
Yeah, I'm sure. You also, I guess for those that don't know too, you also do a lot of costume design as well. So something, an opportunity there to expand on those skills as well.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Perfect.
That's kind of Iggy, if you don't mind jumping in for just a second. That's one thing that I definitely want to make sure that people know about this production when they see it, is that everyone involved was particularly chosen because of their skills. Philip actually has background in fight choreographing. And the neat part about it was that he knew how to direct, basically put a fight together, but then throw in the whole energy, power flowing concept. And Amanda knows how to make costumes. She's a cosplayer that's putting herself out there. And this was just it made sense for her to do this project because it was ideal for the direction she's going with her career in cosplaying. And that's kind of the way it is with everybody. Everybody that worked on this project, a lot of us are amateurs. Some of us are professionals. But everyone knew what they were doing in the field they were working in. Nobody was like, hey, do you think you can, other than like someone I would ask to hold a microphone, pretty much everyone involved in the project had a background in doing what they did on the project.
That's how we run business here. Hey, do you think you could do this? You've probably never done it. Why don't you write this?
I think that really showed in everything, is it all seemed to fit very, very well together. There weren't pieces that seemed to be like forced into the production or anything like that. It all seemed to flow very, very nice. So I think, kudos to you guys for going out and finding those people who could really do and accomplish everything that you guys were trying to do.
Exactly. And notice too, when you watch the credits at the end, you do have a large team there. So what was it like recruiting for it? What was it like getting all these people to jump on board and be like, yeah, I want to do this?
that's probably the hardest part, because sometimes I feel like I'm dragging people to the set and saying, no, you really want to do this. You're really going to like it. That's usually the case with my actors. That wasn't the case with this particular project here. I really feel like I hit the nail on the head when it came to like picking a project to do. Cause I asked Amanda, I like just barely mentioned it to Amanda, and she was like, I'm in. And I met Philip through a friend who I was doing a music video for, and he was on board. It was his suggestion to help me. And then when I found out he actually also knew what he was doing, brought him on board. And a lot of the other actors and people that I work with are people I've met. We've done steampunk web series together. Steamworks and Shadows and Antediluvian are steampunk series that we do as well. I've been working in like television for a little over 10 years now. So I've had all this time to sort of build up a list of people that I know that do certain things, right down to prop building and special effects. So I've had a lot of time to build up my recruiting list, I guess you could say. It wasn't like I sat down and said, I'm going to make a Marvel movie and then I'm going to run all over the place and find people. I mean, I did have to do that to an extent, but a lot of these people I already knew and worked with on actual feature films and other things like that. So the most difficult part, the real finds were Nathan, who plays Luke Cage. I found him just through a friend. He actually had zero acting experience whatsoever. I actually passed him up the first time, which I know you look at him now and think, dude, he's perfect for the part. Why would you pass him up? But at the time, he just seemed like I was really worried he was going to hurt somebody. And I ended up going with another person, and me and Philip, he met with that person, and they ended up backing out. So I went back to Nathan, which worked out perfectly. But yeah, the long answer to your question is that a lot of the people I work with, I tend to work with on a very regular basis. And Philip and Amanda are probably like the newest additions to this group, really. I've worked with Amanda on one other project before, but other than that, this is my second time working with her.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, you mentioned other productions. So it's Red Hawk Productions is that your company?
Retro Hawk Productions.
Oh, I'm sorry. Retro Hawk Productions. I mess up everything.
Jeez.
Anyways, course, yeah.
You're fired.
Here, killing smalls.
I'll take over from here on out.
Okay, go ahead, Aaron.
You okay, so.
What
are you making your next film? We want to hear about your next one.
That is a good question, though. What's next?
Thank you. You're welcome, Iggy.
My next project actually is to go back to my steampunk web series, Antediluvian. And a lot of that is simply based off a floating island that travels through time. And there's a lot of work that actually was put into that project too. We literally built a model that we could superimpose because we didn't want to do CGI. And we've got a lot of costumes. And Amanda's actually involved in that series as well. And I'm actually in the process of bringing Philip in on that too. So, and that's what tends to happen a lot of times. I mean, a lot of these guys are volunteering their own time. Amanda drove like 5 hours for both shoots. So that was what we ended up doing in order to keep everybody going. But anyway, that's the next project I'm working on right now is a steampunk series. And I'm going to be working on a feature film in October as well.
Awesome. That sounds exciting. Just to point out, Philip had no clue he was working on that project with you. You just told him that way. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm very excited to be working with anything with Dustin or Amanda for that matter.
Thank you.
It's wonderful working with the crew that, you know, Dustin just pulled out of the universe and just put this great team together. It's just pure delight to work with people who know what they're doing and have this vision and they're passionate about it. You know, it's a bunch of nerds who care and are in love with what they're doing. Invite me anytime.
Nerds that care. I love that.
Yeah, you better be careful with those invitations. You might get a whole lot of emails coming out. Get ready for it.
Aaron, there you haven't pitched yourself yet. I'm surprised. No.
Oh, but I want to. I'm just
yeah, there you go.
That's just not cool because, you know, this is a podcast.
The rest of us stay away from anything involving a camera, though, so you don't have to worry about us. But awesome. It's great to hear that. And it's always nice, too, when you're able to mesh well with some people and they're able to help with future projects and everything, too. So a lot going on with that. Any details on that feature you mentioned in October, or is it still kind of, I don't know, secret or vague?
A lot of it's under wraps. The one thing that I am doing with the next feature I'm working on is it is going to involve a lot of paid help and paid actors. We're literally getting a film grant and we're going to spend some money. And what I really want to be able to do, to be perfectly honest, is all these people that have been volunteering their time for me for all these years and hours and days, I want to be able to bring on board and actually pay. And that's, which is just, whoa, you're going to pay me? That's always amazing. I mean, I usually always feed my actors and try to set up room and board whenever they're coming in from out of town. But to actually have a fully paid crew, that's a whole nother ball game. And if I may, I did want to jump back to Rare Breed for just a moment because there was so much time put in. Like, for instance, let's talk about the final finger blast, the one she does right before she blows up the car, okay? That effect right there probably took somewhere in the neck of the woods of 12 hours, literally. And that's not counting render time, which is horrendous. Any of you that do any type of encoding and Adobe After Effects and you don't have the fastest computer in the world, you're hitting the encoding switch right before you go to bed and then getting up in the morning and praying it looks good the next day. But that's the kind of work that's involved, you know, and our composer, solodeep.com, I want to get their name out there too because he's done a lot of great work for me. He produces a lot of great music. He's UK originated. My special effects CGI artist who did the Sentinels, he's actually this really cool guy that's with this group called Geeks Gone Bad and lives in Florida. So, I mean, everyone's kind of scattered everywhere. But it really is amazing how much time it takes, though, to make it look the way it looked and how it eventually came out.
Well,
and I'm really, really proud of everybody that was involved.
Sure. Yeah, I have a bit of a question there then.
Yes.
When picking your character, so you guys picked, you wanted to go with Dazzler and you had that idea, then did the amount of CGI and the work that you would have to go into creating that character and getting her on screen, did that play any role in determining who you wanted the main character to be? Does that make sense? Did you have the idea first or did you go, we've got this awesome CGI guy. Now we can go do something more intense than we were thinking originally.
Well, yes and no, actually. That's a really good question, though. Like, originally, I had always thought about doing something with the Dazzler, but I had a completely different person in mind. And when I met Amanda, there was a very short period of time where the Dazzler had brunette hair. But it was so quick. It was so short. I think in the comics, she was even technically wearing a wig. But I really wanted to bring that back. And that's kind of how I got the idea. And I just slightly pitched the idea to Amanda. And as soon as I knew she was on board, that's when I decided that I was going to find someone for her to fight. And I literally Googled most unpopular Marvel characters. I Googled most unpopular Marvel characters, and Luke Cage was one of them. It was the most underused Marvel character, I think, was what I actually Googled. But yeah, Luke Cage came up, and I was like, oh, great. That's what I was looking for, somebody else to get involved that wasn't that well known. And with the, that's you, Philip.
Yeah.
Well. No worries.
Okay, man.
Well, with that.
We met at a party over a couple of beers, and we just got talking, you know, what do you do? And Dustin said he was a filmmaker, and I was like, oh, wow, that's cool. You know, if by chance, you know, I do this thing. And if you have anything available, I love helping keep people safe, for one. And I hate seeing bad violence. But if I'm in town, like, let's clean that up. If you know people who have those skills, like, you know, why not make it the best it can be? And survive to tell about it.
Yeah, it goes back to talking about the passion of it. I just don't want to see this done poorly. Let me help you see. There you go.
And Adam, just to jump back to your question real quick. The funny thing is you guys have seen the whole short, and you know how she hides around the corner and comes out, and then there's the big sentinel and she shoots it and all that. That actually was the only planned shot that I had for a robot sentinel. And I knew the CGI was probably going to be really bad. So my first thought was, let's do like a mostly silhouette, you know, so that people see it and it'll look bad, but it won't look that bad. But then I lucked out, and a friend of mine happened to get a 4K drone and said, hey, do you need any aerial shots for anything? And I was like, well, yeah. And he took these awesome aerial shots, and all those aerial shots that you see in there are all acquired by us. None of the video in there was stock footage. It was all, we filmed everything in there. And we took that, and then about two weeks before I was ready to go live with this, we decided that we wanted to put sentinels in the streets and have them walking around, because it made sense with what Professor X is saying at the beginning, just to see a bunch of empty streets and say, we need to focus on doing this, even though it's not obviously there. You know, we didn't want to do that. So we put the robots in. But yeah, basically to answer your question, Adam, I already knew I wanted to do a robot sentinel, but how much we could do of it really wasn't known until after we really started to dig into the project and see what our CGI could do. CGI guy. Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
Sorry for the extremely long answer.
No, perfect. And did you have something to add there, Philip?
Oh, I just said, I thought it looked awesome. I mean, I really, really, like, we did our parts. And then we saw it all put together with all the special effects and CGI, and it was just like, you know, blew our minds.
Yeah, for sure. Perfect. Well, awesome. Well, and let's wrap things up here and give you all one last chance to kind of maybe plug yourselves, talk a little bit. I'll start. Philip, is there anywhere people can find you or enlist your services for projects similar?
Well, Facebook is the best way to get a hold of me. But yeah, that's pretty simple. My email is philip@fightthrive.com.
Perfect. And Amanda, same for you.
Yeah. All of my cosplay and costume stuff is on Facebook under Esmeralda Von Katz. And I also have links and some really fun behind the scenes shots of Rare Breed. There's some of those are pretty crazy pictures, actually. and it's really fun to look at.
Perfect. And Dustin, any other shout outs, links, things of that nature that you wanted to add for Rare Breed as well as Retro Hawk? I got it right this time.
check out retrohawkproductions.com, and that usually takes you straight to the Facebook page. And really, the one thing I want to make sure everyone understands is that none of us are making any money off of particular productions like this. We're all doing it for the love of the art, the love of the characters. And that's what we do. We spend a lot of our time doing that because film is an art form, and we're doing art, and we're halfway dying doing it, but we're enjoying it while we're at it.
For sure, for sure. So for those of us that find us on Project Nerd or, of course, over on our Podbean page, definitely check out. We'll have these links available. If you're picking us up on iTunes or through RSS, head over to those pages. Or like you said, go to Retro Hawk Productions, either on Facebook or the link directly. And I'm sure you can Google search it as well. Well, thank you three so much for joining us today. We had a great time watching the video, of course, talking with y'all. Hopefully, we'll get to see more projects from y'all in the future.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. All right, go again, Tyler.
I was just saying, I only had one question to ask, and Adam asked it first in a much worse way than I would have.
Well, I don't have what they call the social skills to be out in the world, so yeah.
No doubt. Again, that was Amanda Phillip and Dustin joining us from the short film Rare Breed. Dazzler and Luke Cage. Shocked, I don't know. I guess not too shocked that Luke Cage at this point is a underutilized character and things. I have a feeling that's going to change here soon, though. Getting a little bit more attention there in the Marvel cinematic world.
I don't know if it gets to be called the cinematic world if it's on Netflix.
Well, it all kind of ties together because they said,
Sort of. All right.
Yeah.
The MCU,
I get to say it.
We'll see.
Just the MCU.
I don't know. It's going to have to be really good because they set the bar really high with Daredevil.
It's true. True. And, but I think, I don't know. I'm not disappointed fearing anything, I guess to say. You've got really strong characters, really dark universes, and you're putting them on a service that allows you to have that creativity. You're not limiting yourself by network television, time constraints, things of that nature, I think you get a lot of flexibility with these characters. So I think it'll be good. But I do agree. Yeah, Daredevil's bar, set high for the Marvel Netflix universe. Is that better, Tyler?
Well,
it's still MCU. I'm just giving you a hard time.
Yeah, until they do something that isn't good, then, they definitely get the benefit of the doubt for basically whatever they want. Like, oh, they're going to do Guardians of the Galaxy, and everybody's like, well, yeah, we'll see how good that can be. And
I would say that their biggest misses so far have maybe been chunks of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but, as a whole, it's been solid. It's not been great. It's not been terrible. It's been solid. And then a couple of the middle phase two movies, like Thor the Dark World, I think wasn't like super well received, but it also came out in a weird time in phase two. So
I like that movie. I can't help it.
That's the thing is I don't dislike the movie. I just realized like halfway through, I didn't really know what was going on, nor did I really care what was going on.
It looked cool.
It had Natalie Portman and Stellan Skarsgård and Thor and Dark Elves and Loki, but at no point did I ever feel any connection to what the hell was going on.
Hold on. If I said that I loved that movie, would you change your opinion entirely and say that it was utter shit?
No, because I don't change my opinion based on weird popular opinion. Because you come from like two different sides from it. It's like everyone. Sorry, Aaron's quote, everyone loves it, so she's got to hate it.
I loved it or hated it.
So, not part of the MCU, but just wow about last weekend is really all you can say about Fantastic Four. The numbers, it still was just a close second. It almost could have taken number one spot in box office, but not with numbers to brag about. Before you even had a chance, the reviews came out a couple days early. I think it's too because it got European release a few days before us, so technically they were still held. Then the director starts even bashing the project. And at that point,
it was dead. It was dead.
And the thing is, there was terrible things coming out about Josh Trank's behavior during like post-production and stuff like that. And then for him to jump on like right after it comes out and try to disavow it. And then people coming from both sides of the aisle defending him and or shitting on him. Like, I think the whole production was a clusterfuck from beginning to end, it sounds like.
He's got to watch himself. He doesn't really have the storied career to be doing this, you know?
He has zero career. He made one movie when he was in his 20s that was fairly well received. He doesn't get to act like he's...
That's my point. He's got to be careful because you're taking on some giants there with this one. This isn't, you know, Chronicle, Under the Radar. If people would have said the same thing, nobody would have noticed. This is a pretty big deal, and his comments obviously getting blown up. But I think spelling doom is the proper way to put, you know, for this movie, because just seeing the images.
Would that be Von Doom?
Yeah, just seeing the images of Dr. Doom. I thought Fox was messing up with the way Apocalypse looked. I thought Fox is, you know, just, but looking, I don't even want to talk about it. That's how annoyed I am by the way Dr. Doom looks in this Fantastic Four reboot.
There's been a great image floating around of Fox's Apocalypse and Doom next side by side to each other. It says what Fox can do. And then a picture of two unbelievable cosplayers doing Apocalypse and Dr. Doom. It says what unpaid cosplayers can do.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, no.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, and I think there's just been this, ever since Nolan hit the scene, there's been this huge, and you can tell it in a lot of Fox's movies, this, everything's got to be gritty. We got to embrace the realism. We got to do that, which is awesome if you're working with Batman or you're working with... Well, no, I mean, like certain characters, it lends itself to, but if you try to go to that super real, super gritty, super dark world, and you're doing something as kind of ridiculous as the Fantastic Four, it's not going to play. You've got a stretchy guy, a fire guy, a rock guy, and the chick who turns invisible, and their whole relationship for years in the comics has been this kind of playful, funny, family dynamic thing. They don't need super gritty, everything's terrible and we hate each other kind of nonsense. Like, it's the same thing with Man of Steel. Like, Batman, I mean, Superman in a standalone film doesn't lend himself to that super gritty realism. And it shows.
Fantastic Four, you just, it's all wrong. I think one of my favorite quotes from a friend who saw it was, "I like my movies to have a middle," because it sounds like the beginning is that type of Fantastic Four movie. And then the next thing you know, it's just dark, serious tone. But the other thing too is, like, I mean, you're talking about, so you send four teenage scientists to outer space and then whatever happens, and then you're given the Clobbering Time backstory to, that's how Ben Grimm, what his brother used to say when he beat him up, like, and then you have the Dr. Doom look, and then you have, I mean, you can just keep going and going and going on this, and it's just not pretty. I would say, yeah, it obviously, I would say no sequel, another reboot coming from Fox. Got to hang on to those characters though, so they'll keep rebooting that franchise.
And just to be clear, like, we haven't seen it necessarily, but there is a really good review on Project Nerd that is spot on. Like, it listed exactly the things why I knew ahead of time this is not going to be an enjoyable film, and it's not even something that you can take the kids to and say this is like, like, this is at least entertaining for a PG audience, because it's not. It's nothing like that.
See, I knew it was going to be bad. I was at Kansas City Comic Con this weekend, and 20th Century Fox was there, and they had their big display for Fantastic Four. On Sunday, there was nothing. Nobody was there to push the movie or anything. You'd think that would be the ideal time to do that. I mean, you have a room full of 10,000 geeks, and there was nobody there. They weren't, the ship had already sailed and they were done. They knew it was not going to be pretty.
But speaking of movies, Adam, did you want to add to the Fantastic Four there?
I do. I have a question about the review embargoes, and I want to know what you guys think. I have this idea in my head that when you tell a reviewer that they can't release the review of the movie that they get to see significantly ahead of time, until the movie comes out. Does that negatively, like, as a movie watcher, would you have a negative opinion of this movie? Like, wow, they don't want me to talk about this until it comes out. This must suck. And then you watch the movie. Sure enough, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You think it sucks.
Yes. Yeah. Because they're trying, you know, most movies make their money on their first weekend. And if there are no reviews, you know, people aren't going to see the movie to review it until that Friday. And the reviews aren't going to come out till the weekend or even Monday. Well, they already made their money. And so if you have a real crappy movie and you do the review on Monday before it opens, they're not going to get the business.
I think it's less a self-fulfilling prophecy and more just a vote of confidence from, you know, the suits at whatever studio it is, because it like he said, it's that first weekend makes or breaks a movie as far as momentum goes. It finished at what, 24?
26, I think it was.
Did it get that high after final numbers?
So it made like $26 million over the weekend with the reviews that came out Thursday, Friday. If it's sitting at a 9% Rotten Tomatoes on Monday, I doubt it even touches that number, you know, with the other stuff that came out this week, the other stuff that was still showing. So, I mean, I guess the thing is about it is every time I think it's different based on the type of movie. Like if some, you know, crappy B horror movie has a real embargo. Like I knew what I was getting there. I'm not like making any judgment calls, but when it's a tentpole summer blockbuster that, you know, your studio's banking on and spent money on, and then you don't let anyone review it, like that's a pretty straight up indicator that there's a lot of people at the top who have written it off.
The writing is on the wall at that point. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's a more damning. There are certain things that get announced in the movie world that are pretty damning as far as like not only do our consumers not going to like it, but the producers, you know, the people making it don't like it. And it's like the review embargo is the worst one, but it's right up there with finding out that, you know, 6 months after, you know, production wrap, they're doing like reshoots like that, and they push back the production date. That's right up there with that. Like, well, that obviously someone with a lot of pull or someone super in charge of that studio has decided that whatever they came up with was crap.
Right. I guess that's where I get to it though. If you know your movie's that bad, is it better to then pause it, do some reshoots, let people review it and get good press out there for it, as opposed to nothing? Like literally there's nobody talking about it. Like it seems like you kind of kill your own buzz.
Yeah, you make the mistake of assuming that this movie was released with the intention of Fox making a critically acclaimed movie and or releasing a movie that made money. I mean, from the beginning, this specific one and all of the stuff that Fox does was made with one purpose and one purpose only: we have to retain the rights to Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. Like they were on a clock. The rushness of the script, the rushness of the shoot, the rushness of the production, like this was one of those things that they were on a clock and it literally didn't matter what happened. That movie was going to come out and it was going to come out on time so that they can keep making, so they can hold on to that IP. Like if it had been something else, if it had been anything else, if it had been an original screenplay, if it had been something where the rights weren't expiring, I think you do see that. I think you see it. I think a year ago, they pushed back the release date 6 months and they go reshoot it. They hire a new director. They do something. I don't think Josh Trank gets to go on the giant, you know, gets to go apeshit like he did. Either on set or offset, I think this movie was on rails and it wasn't coming off until it hit the theater.
Yeah, I mean, here's one of the things I'm kind of not buying Frank's comments, because I guess the studio was wanting to do 3D, but he kind of nixed that. He did not want it to be in 3D, and so they decided not to do the film in 3D. Another thing also is, from what I hear from his issues during the filming, he lost the directing shot of the next one or one of the next Star Wars films. So, you know,
Good. Either way. That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
And just hearing about Fantastic Four.
I don't know if there's any good guys in this except for, I mean, everyone, like, I like all four of the main characters cast-wise.
Yeah.
Everything I've read says that they were all solid with what they had to work with, and that the first 30 minutes to an hour of the movie is actually pretty solid as far as setup, and then it just falls apart after that. But
Yeah.
I don't like, there's plenty of times that production, you know, has been taken away from a director and suits have ruined a movie. There's been plenty of times that directors have ruined movies. I don't know if there's any good guys in this. I think it was a straight up, we got to get it out. I don't care what, how bad it is or what we have to do. This movie will be in theaters. We will hold on to the rights and we'll figure it out next time the rights are about to expire.
So speaking of good guys, I did see Mission Impossible 5 this weekend. I will say that was a winner in my book. Big fan of the franchise. I know Bob's seen it. Has anybody else seen it too?
Not yet.
I don't have a good theater here.
Do you have a theater in your town there, Adam?
We do. We have a Carmike 7 screen. Which
you were cursed with Carmike. Sorry.
Yeah. Man.
So, anyways, I don't know.
Carmike Manhattan's getting an IMAX theater.
So yeah, we'll see how that goes. So, Bob,
That back right speaker is still going to be blown out. So, it doesn't matter.
It's their trademark.
It'll be a big screen, so you don't have to worry about it as much. It's all right.
So, Bob's comments on Mission Impossible, I would say, are pretty accurate to how I feel. This one was on par with the first one. It without saying anything negative about the third and fourth one. The third and fourth one were great. This is a franchise that holds up time and time again. Amazing how they can do so many like edge of your seat action sequences and it not be the same thing and yet somehow be somewhat similar to the previous movies. If that makes sense, if it doesn't, just wait till you see this movie and you'll get what I mean. But amazing action sequences again. Definitely fun moments. I think the reason why it puts it back on par with one is that you add that suspense layer to it again. With three and four, you know who your villain is. You know what the plot is. You know the reason. You know everything like that. With this one again, you do get an early introduction to the villain, but there's certain things happening that you don't know who's playing whose side, and you don't know the motive. And then when the villain's plot is revealed, it's actually a really, really solid plot and really believable reason to drive that villain and of course the syndicate as advertised. So I think overall it's hard to rank these movies. I was joking about it this weekend, but it's definitely one of the better ones, and it's crazy here you're at number five, and it's one of those franchises where I think I really see that they could turn this into a Bond style franchise. You could replace, you know, Ethan Hunt and keep this going for years and years.
Yeah. What'd you think of the female lead?
Absolutely amazing. The quote that came to mind was from The Losers. That chick is volatile. She is solid in that movie. She is absolutely, she does everything right. I'll put it that way. The actress does everything right to give you every moment of how she changes from scene to scene in certain situations. She's downright plays every part in that movie she needs to. And I say that in a way, it's a spy movie. So everybody's playing different parts throughout the movie, you know, cause you're different missions, you're doing different things. And she does a fantastic job there's the scene with the sniper, with the weapons, and she puts that leg up in that dress and then puts up the gun on there. And I was just like, woo, woo. Calm down again. And so no, she's
pretty awesome. Gosh,
that's you need to be warned for it so you can be ready to cover up with the popcorn or whatever you need. So, but
this is a family show, buddy.
No, it's not. Don't even pretend. Tyler will drop some like 10 F-bombs in a row here in a second when we make him mad. But anyways, good movie. Check it out. The other movie I did want to talk to, because we are short on time with doing that interview the first half, is I wanted to bring up real quickly. I know Tyler's tired of talking about it, but early screening. I don't even know how they've had a screening this early. Batman versus Superman. Standing ovation?
They have a screening this early because the movie was supposed to come out this year, for crying out loud.
Wait, let me get this straight. So they showed the movie early to a group of people whose careers rest on whether or not it's successful and maybe or may or may not have paid for it and may or may not have worked for the company that made it, and they all really enjoyed it. That's what you're telling me. This is breaking news.
That is
my friend.
That is
breaking
news.
Would they stand and clap for it though? Like, just
if first of all, people who stand up and clap after a movie's over need to be dragged out into the street and shot.
That's everybody in India.
Yeah,
I don't know where that came from, honestly.
I
haven't been to a lot of theaters in Mumbai.
Just because you know, as part of your culture, partake in clapping and throwing popcorn at your movies. Doesn't
we are not, Aaron, this is only relevant if they showed the if they did show in India
in Mumbai or something.
I don't care. I think we
were there live actors. Were there live actors and or musicians on the stage?
You stop it. No. I think people should do that here. I think people
Anyways, I want to say it was College Humor, one of those ones that does like the cartoon, like the internet comic strips, did a really funny one that says the problem with Zack Snyder directing Ben Affleck as Batman, and Zack Snyder, it shows Zack Snyder, it's quoted saying, no, I want you to say, do you bleed like this? And then Ben Affleck goes, okay, non-Academy Award-winning director Zack Snyder of the Owls of Al Ghul, or Legend of the Guardians, Owls of Al Ghul. Yeah, I was like, that's that right there was priceless.
Well, as DC has laid out more and more of their slate, it's become very clear. I mean, to be fair, I think everyone wants to be Batman, but the fact that I think that this gig was done because the deal was, oh, okay, tell you what, come be in our movie, and then you can star in and direct your own Batman movie, like Christopher Nolan. Okay, I'm on board. So.
No, and that's what I think.
Can we skip to that movie?
Yeah.
I'm on board with that movie. Yes, please.
Yeah.
Our weekly news piece, The Movie Pass, is back, and I think I put that in there that nobody, you know, nobody directs Affleck quite as well as Academy Award winner Ben Affleck. So, you know,
Gus Van Sant did a very good job.
Okay, that's true. I think some of Affleck's best roles, especially recently, of course, have been in his own movies. So I was excited for him as an older Batman, anyways, but to also see him now be able to take those reins, I feel confident. And like you said, I feel confident in those sets of movies. Snyder again losing confidence. But anyways, we won't stay too long on it since Tyler shut down that standing.
I'm just saying, like, we've talked about it a lot, but at the same time, like, this is the opposite of actual news about the movie.
So I do want to.
We screened it for people who work at Warner Brothers, and they all thought it was awesome. You know what else they thought they was awesome? Every other fucking thing that Warner Brothers has released.
There you go, there you go, Adam. God. God.
We're a family show.
I knew this topic. I knew it drawed out of them.
We're going to have to put a moratorium on Batman v Superman.
So, anyways, I do want to stay on movies real quick before we move on. And that was a reboot that we really haven't talked about that much, so I don't really know everybody's solid opinion on the Ghostbusters reboot. But I'm not looking too forward for it. And I want to – what's his name, the director? I always mistake his name with the Marvel guy too, Kevin Feige. But no, it's Paul Feig, right? Yeah, Paul. I mean, Bridesmaid was a hit, but then he tried to do the same thing over and over again with what's her name, McCarthy. And now he's putting it all in the Ghostbusters. But Bill Murray spotted on set.
Yep.
Well, see, and this one's not a reboot so much as it is another story – in that universe, right? Like, this is...
I'm pretty sure one of them is, like, they're the same characters, just female versions of it.
That would be a horrible, horrible, horrible idea.
Yeah.
Like, they're at least the exact
replicas of them.
The badness of that idea could be represented in, let's say, oh, I don't know, a Twinkie. And this Twinkie is epically bad. I'm on board if it is a movie that takes place in a Ghostbuster universe, a place where ghosts exist and the Ghostbusters have been around and doing their thing, and now there's a new team taking over, or a, you know, folks doing something in Chicago instead of New York, something like that. I'm okay with that.
Just to chime in right here, I will stand corrected, because Kristen Wiig's playing Erin Gilbert, Melissa McCarthy, Abby Yates, Kate McKinnon, Gillian Holtzman. So they are different people, although they do seem like clones of the original ones when you look at some of the pictures. And Bill Murray's already been added to IMDb, by the way.
I would say it looks like they look like more of the animated series than the actual film.
Yes. So Bill Murray was like super anti Ghostbusters for a long time. Like,
he was the main reason why you never saw the Ghostbusters 3. He didn't want to do it. And he said
that with Harold Ramis. I mean,
well, and paraphrasing his quote, was like, nobody wants to see four old guys running around with proton packs on their back.
Exactly. And, but that's why.
And I remember that quote because yes, we do want to see that, but yeah. No, yes, there was also a falling out. I believe, A big part of that was Groundhog Day. There was a lot of issues on set with Groundhog Day, and that was during the time, if I remember correctly, Murray was going through his divorce at that time, and supposedly was just a pill to work with. So that created a lot of problems there. And then I think, that was probably a big part of it.
I don't know. I don't have a problem with it. I'm not going to pass judgment until it comes out. The premise is slightly different. They got good people to be in it. I don't know.
They get the same people that he gets every movie, though. Paul Feig, is afraid to cast a different lead actress.
But there's, honestly, there's...
Okay, there's two of them, Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy. And I don't know how much that has to do with him and how much that has to do with the fact that, hey, I want to make a giant blockbuster movie that's the four main characters are all women. I don't think any studio is going to let him go pick whoever the fuck he wants. They've got to be people who have got a track record.
I mean, McCarthy has the box office. Him and McCarthy together make money.
And Wiig, and Kristen Wiig. They're both
huge. Oh, yeah.
And Kate McKinnon and Leslie Jones have been in nothing, so...
I will give you that. But the thing is I personally and overall, the numbers are still there, but the reviews and the feedback about him, Feig's recent movies have not been a success. The one that was his biggest, brightest star was actually, Wiig's idea. It was Kristen Wiig who had the concept and wrote the script and did that. And they had to hand it to, they had to hand it to say anything other than they just wouldn't let her direct. So he ended up stepping in that chair and connecting.
He's really only directed three movies that anyone knows about. And two of them were people really enjoyed and were fairly successful. And one of them wasn't.
Which one wasn't?
The Heat. But it still made a lot of money.
That's what I was saying.
He's only directed three movies. Bridesmaids, which was crazy successful. Spy, which was pretty successful and people seemed to like it. Mm-hmm. And The Heat, which was made a lot of money and maybe wasn't critically acclaimed. But it's not like he's been putting out just really awful stuff. Now, McCarthy's had a couple bad ones, but he hasn't.
Bridesmaids is the only one that I really think is good in that trio. Yeah. But
I'm just going to wait.
Have you seen Spy? Spy's actually pretty decent, I thought.
You're talking – which one's Spy? The one?
The brand new
one. The new one. No,
Jason Statham and
I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the – what's that other crappy spy chick flick with Captain Kirk and Tom Hardy? And Reese Witherspoon.
This Means War?
Yeah.
Definitely not Beth Dunnett, Paul Feig.
I don't know, but even
– really good reviews.
Even looking at the trailer for, I don't know. I'm kind of over that formula of this, the same thing. And I'm really over Melissa McCarthy right now. The chickiest of the chick flicks in those is Bridesmaids. And I like it. And second of all, y'all give me crap for liking certain chick flicks all the time.
I feel like you're
romantic comedies. This is comedy with all women. And I don't think you like it.
I feel like you're mistaking Paul Feig for someone else. He's literally made three movies in the last 5 years, and they were all pretty good.
I'm not buying they were good. The Heat was terrible, and just the trailer alone.
Okay,
for Spy,
they were all fairly successful, and Spy had.
I didn't say they weren't successful. I just said that the reviews have not been as favorable since Bridesmaid, which I was saying is definitely his best work of that. I also have a problem, and I get sick of seeing the articles, and I get sick of what Aaron's painting right here too. Just because I'm not on board for the Ghostbusters reboot, if it would have been four guys, I wouldn't have been on board for it. I don't need these movies that were just three decades old now that are still from my childhood and just complete. You know what? Make the sequels. I will deal with that. I will be fine with that. Go see them. But we don't need to reboot these things. We don't need to reboot it if they. Did Goonies with Goonies with all women or with all boys? I'd be upset too.
I'm getting at. You don't know the script. We don't know what the story is. It is a sequel. That's what I'm getting at. It's not a reboot. It's not the Ghostbusters never existed, and these are.
I'm assuming,
women.
Especially with Bill Murray showing up.
Yeah, Bill Murray's back in it. I'm guessing it is more of a sequel than it is a reboot.
And you shut your screen, Tyler. Shut your screen up.
This just in, Iggy's on in full on Aaron mode, just spouting nonsense with zero backing up.
Anyways.
The only reason why you are saying that you're not going to like this movie is because of Paul Feig. and Melissa McCarthy teaming up again.
No, and I just went off on
and they've teamed up three times. Okay. And two times they had a 90% or better on Rotten Tomatoes.
Let's ignore
the two for three. That's pretty solid.
Quit rebooting these childhood movies of ours while we're still like only a few decades away. That was a big part too. So let's ignore that part. But anyway.
Yeah, but you like lots of those.
No, well, which ones do I like?
That were the
new Ninja Turtles animated series, the first.
Whoa! First of all, I do not like the new Michael Bay Ninja Turtles movie.
No, the animated one.
That was the sequel. That was the fourth one. It does. Watch it. Seriously,
no, it's
watch
not.
Watch it. It pays. It does too. It has all it.
You're an idiot.
References the time traveling piece. It references the Shredder being defeated and all that stuff.
I honestly don't understand why you're not excited about this movie, but you literally have something against it, and it makes zero sense to me.
I think it's
I don't have strong feelings about it either way, but you're very strongly against it for no apparent reason.
I wasn't that strongly against it until you and Aaron started acting like fools over here and painting me as this sexist, terrible person.
Only you're a bit of a misogynist.
Comedy, apparently.
Apparently you don't think women can be funny.
But women and men are just not equally funny.
Let's see, a few other things. So Dragon Ball Z, which I'm not a huge Dragon Ball Z fan because I'm a sexist and hate Paul Feig. So it is... did pretty successful at the box office this past week, and already in the first, has it been a week at this point since we recorded? It's just been a week, and it's already in the top 10 domestic for anime releases. So I know George saw it and reviewed it. I don't think any of us have seen it, have we?
No, because I want to get a whole story. I don't have to come back. And that's always been my knock against. That's always been my knock against Dragon Ball Z is that, like, legitimately, the first 7 minutes is a recap of what happened last episode, and then there's 7 minutes of story, and then there's 7 minutes of what's coming up in the next preview. 3 weeks.
Like, that's something about all the fighting animes, like Dragon Ball, all the Dragon Balls, the Narutos. That, like, here's what happened in that last episode for 5 minutes.
Right.
It's 5 minutes of actual action, which is mostly just fast cuts between people staring each other down and yelling. Right. And then here's 5 minute preview of what we're going to do next week.
Yeah. So I never got into it. So I'm not seeing the movie. That's not happening. No.
Well, we have our new podcast that hit Project Nerd this week, Sexy Nerd Science. They got access to the screener the week before last. So the last episode they did before being part of the Project Nerd team. And I don't even think they really gave it a review because they just really, really geeked out about it. So I would say they were very favorable for it because they were pretty stoked about it. So they gave us some good insight into it too. So if you're interested in learning more about it, they definitely touched on that in, I don't know what episode they're on, but one of those episodes. So the one that has Abby and Keith on it. But that's pretty big because it passed just this weekend, past two of Miyazaki's films. So that's no small feat right there. So definitely opens the doors for more Dragon Ball in theaters and probably even more on Adult Swim and other avenues. So,
yeah, I feel like it's still on Nickelodeon. Yeah.
I mean, to date, it's the ninth highest grossing, feature length
anime feature. Yeah.
Yeah. Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, Miyazaki, Pokemon, Miyazaki, 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 Pokemon 3, Miyazaki, Miyazaki, Digimon, another monster trade carding game thing, Dragon Ball, and then Miyazaki again.
So the point is that this new Dragon Ball movie is the only non-Miyazaki, card game anime to be in the top 10 domestically at the box office. So congratulations.
Well done, Dragon Ball. Yeah. Well done.
Congratulations. All right. So we've spent a lot of time on theater stuff, so we're running short on time, but there was a few things we did want to get out there too. Tyler brought up beforehand, Cable, Deadpool coming back in a comic series.
It's going to be Deadpool and Cable now. I can't think of the title of it, but it's one of the ones they're going to launch through their, what do you call it? The digital first platform that Marvel's been really pushing. It's called Deadpool and Cable Split Second, and it's basically spiritual successor to Cable and Deadpool. And I don't know, Cable and Deadpool is one of the most, it was a very critically acclaimed series. It ran for 50 issues, but it's also like quite possibly one of the most 90s series of all time, with really strangely drawn feet and giant arms and shit tons of pouches on every surface that you could possibly put a pouch on.
But you might need to put something in that pouch. So it's
Cable even carries babies through
everything.
Yeah. So he's got to, you know, got to get diapers in a pouch. You got to get bottles, you know, pacifier. That guy's carrying Baby Hope around.
I mean, I'm looking at the cover for the issue, and I will show it to you.
Here comes a screen share. Here comes a screen share.
I will show it to you. And I'm a little concerned. I can only count literally 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pouches on this. Yeah. I also can't see their feet, but see if they're normal size or not. But
Cable is partially covered too by Deadpool, so the rest of his belt might be loaded.
Cable's only got 3, and that's not nearly enough for Cable. And
I can pick up. I'm picking up 2 on the belt. That's only both. Never mind. You're right. 3.
So I don't know. But it's being written. But it's being written by Fabian and Riley Brown, who did Cable and Deadpool. So I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, I'm down for that. So along with that, too, I think January, Marvel's releasing their first adult-targeted coloring book featuring Deadpool. So grown adults, get out your red and, of course, your brown colors, as Deadpool would say, because you have a lot of coloring to do. Not meant for young audiences. It's supposed to be a blood-filled, well, depending on how you color it, a blood-filled coloring.
Yeah, you don't know. I might color mine urine-filled. You don't know.
Oh, wow. Maybe that was probably still not. You don't know.
Anyway, so a big tech news, too, that it was off the wall, and that's why I really wanted to bring it up real quick, was Google announcing Alphabet. So Adam Shagan said no. So give you a rundown. We'll have a news article up this week on it for Project Nerd. Google, after they waited for the stock market to close, didn't have wasn't one of those, here's an invitation to come to my press conference 3 weeks from now, like these tech companies typically do. And they announced their new parent company, Alphabet. So Alphabet, the stockholders, the executive team, all that is now transferred over to Alphabet instead of Google. So the CEO of Google is now the CEO of Alphabet. If you own 10 shares in Google, you now own 10 shares in Alphabet. And Google is just now a subsidiary that is handling all the web stuff. So, of course, the search, YouTube,
It's going to be the G.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be that's a good idea, I think, on their part, because Google has gotten so crazily diversified between all the things they're trying to get into. And basically, this is just a new, for lack of a better term, parent or holding company to then spin off. Because they said now they're going to spin off, you know, Nest and their research labs and all the other things they do that aren't web-based search and
what allows advertising them
into their own companies. And then you also limit your liability when one of your giant crazy ventures that maybe a company that's a web search engine shouldn't get into fails miserably. It doesn't hurt the overall.
Exactly. So you don't lose out Google standard straight business. So advertisers, sponsors, things like that nature, investors aren't worried about those moonshot businesses. Those moonshot businesses are all now separate. So if they need to reach out to separate investors or other things like need partners in it, you're no longer giving partnership to a Google company. You're just giving partnership to that certain product. So exactly, Nest, Google, all those things remain separate when somebody else invests in their space travel or their drones or their, you know, self-driving vehicles. So perfect. So I just thought it was exciting, crazy that they announced it late, and amazing that that announcement allowed their shares to rise $7 even after the stock market was closed, thanks to internet trading. So obviously people who are savvy in internet trading own shares at Google, so we're able to make an impact on the shares there. But some big news for sure. You can check it out in the news story on there. This weekend, Man from U.N.C.L.E. and Straight Outta Compton, both hitting theaters. So we should see a big change there. But we're running out of time. I'm going to close this quickly. So everybody, you get just a minute for your final thoughts. Adam, we'll start with you.
Preoccupied this week. Final thought. I just picked up Dune. I've never read it before. So all of our book fans out there, I apologize that I haven't read this before. And I'm super excited. And I'm hoping to be done by the time you hear this. So hooray.
I did like
about Tyler, the waters of
how
your home.
Exciting Tyler was about that, though, by the way. So, Tyler, your final
He's going to learn about the Klondike Cataract. Two things. First off, are tickets still available for Project Cosplay?
They are. They are.
Okay. Number two, we're in the middle. We're starting a new thing that we'll eventually be talking about called the Fantasy Movie League. and we're in like a kind of a preseason process right now, just having like some trial runs. And if anyone's keeping score at home, I'm currently winning by a solid like $40, $50 million after one weekend. So
anyways, so you'll probably be hearing about it.
Iggy put some money down on the Fantastic Four, and that was not a good bet.
Now, I still thought it would do something box office wise, but
ouch.
Yeah. But anyways,
I filled four of my theaters with Mission Impossible 3.
You'll be hearing a lot about it as the Project Nerd team is playing Fantasy Movie League. You can go to fantasymovieleague.com and check it out. It's started by, I can't remember his name, but he's part of Grantland. He's the movie guy for Grantland, whatever Grantland is going to be now.
Will Leach?
Leaving. Is that it?
Well, I mean, he's one of the guys who writes the movie reviews for
them. Probably. It's a partnership of a bunch of guys. So it's a pretty legitimate and pretty solid site. Costs you nothing to play. You jump right in, and doesn't it really ask for that much information? Email address and you make a password. That's it. So not something that steals your identity or anything either. So, all right, Bob, closing words.
Hey, spent the weekend in Kansas City at Kansas City Comic Con. They did pretty well for a first year con. About 10,000 people. Had about 10,000 people for the weekend. A lot of good guests. Got opportunity to talk to Austin St. John, Red Ranger. Got to meet Jackie Brown herself, Pam Grier. Got to talk a little bit to Hodor.
Aaron, closing remarks.
I am looking forward to Dragon Con, and I'm prepping for Dragon Con. And also, I wanted to point out that this was a really good time tonight talking to those people for that movie that we talked about.
Yes, so Rare Breed. Red Rock Productions. Yeah. Definitely check it out. Of course, I'll add on to what Tyler was bringing up, Project Cosplay. We do still have tickets available, plenty of tickets available. I would say, though, at this rate, if you wait till September, if they keep selling at the rate they are, you're not going to find any luck getting them. But then at that case, though, we can start collecting volunteers. So some of y'all, if you're good at volunteering, go ahead and wait till September because we could use you. VIP tickets are almost gone. And I actually thought VIP tickets would be the ones that hung around to last because they are $50, but those ones are pretty much gone. So if you want your shirt and your gift bag from potential sponsors and things like that, definitely jump in on those VIP tickets now. Other than that, sorry for the rushed back end here, but we did have a great time talking with the team for Rare Breed, so do check out that film. Of course, mentioning new things we're doing, so we are playing Fantasy Movie League, and probably you'll be talking about it at least in the weeks that Tyler wins, because he'll definitely gloat about it on the podcast. But
so every week is what you're saying, is what you're trying to say.
Anyways, other things going on, of course, is we brought back the Movie Pass, your weekly movie news to give you a little view at the box office instead of Friday, giving you a preview of what's to come. It's going to wrap up everything for the weekend Monday, so you can check out those numbers and then some big news that happened at the end of the previous week. Of course, do the week before, we'll probably keep you updated on the podcast. Of course, the cosplay spotlight and new cosplay tutorials, as well as cosplay casual, are all dropping over the past, have dropped or are dropping over the next few weeks. So the wonderful cosplay galleries that you all seem to love so much on Project Nerd that draw most of our traffic, more traffic than anything else, including our cosplay collections, are part of that is what I'm trying to say there. We're adding quite a variety of cosplay content to the site, so you can definitely learn how to build costumes, see interviews and spotlights of great and talented cosplayers, continue to see awesome galleries, and of course, cosplay collection. And then something that I really like is that cosplay casual piece that Brenda is doing, and it basically allows you to just take your kind of like make a quick closet cosplay with just a quick online shopping routine to look some characters. So she's already had Princess Leia done, and then next week will be The Thing from the Fantastic Four reboot we just talked about. So other than that, of course, it was a fun week. It was an exciting episode, as exciting as last week, even though we didn't prelude that it would be an awesome episode. But nonetheless, we had fun, team, I would say so. I am excited because this week, too, one last thing as we close, be our first week for Project Nerd Podcast. So Optimistic Gamers dropped on Monday, Modern Sex back on Tuesday. Thursday, the brand new Sexy Nerd Science from Josh and Drew. And then, of course, this one right here, the Nerdcast. So with that, this is where we say it. Same nerd time, same nerd channel.
There you go.
Thought we were doing a quick wrap-up.
Hooray.
All right.
We get a quick wrap-up. He gets just to talk for however long he wants to.